Flame On is presented by the Nerdy Show Network, geeky programming for all nerds across the multiverse. All Nerdy Show programming is made possible by A Comic Shop, Orlando's number one comic book shop and nerd destination, and with the generous support of listeners like you. To learn how you can support this and other fine geeky programming, visit nerdyshow.com.
Spandex makes me horny. Drag is the new spandex.
Welcome, everyone, to Drag is the New Spandex. We're doing more episodes than Flame On. Look at that. I'm your host, Oral. Hi, that's me. I realize how that works now when you introduce yourself. You don't wait. You don't pause.
It's like when I'm hosting karaoke and I sing, and I always feel awkward going, give it up for me.
Exactly.
Yep, that's the host's. It's the life of being a host.
And if you didn't realize by now, I'm here with our illustrious producer and member of the cast, Pat.
What's going on?
Hi. Funny you should mention that. So hosting karaoke last night, I'm just like, all right, next up we have singing is, oh, that's me. That's me. I'm on the scroller. That's me. I'm up next. All right, so we're here for our recap episode. It's episode 4 of the sequels.
It's the halfway point.
Thank God.
I know. I'm so drained. I'm so emotionally drained from this season.
It's like this season on paper and leading up to it, super exciting. But it's, in all actuality, like the first episode, dynamite. 2, 3... forgettable.
Two was good. Two was snatch game. It didn't have the drama.
It didn't have the drama because it was half of the episode was
about a door.
A door.
But that's where you're right. They also right. they didn't have the shell shock of like this is what's going on. Mm-hmm. So they didn't have that drama. It was a good episode, but three. If you listen to our last recap last Monday, or whenever you listen to it. You know that we didn't love the lip sync extravaganza.
Nope.
This episode, quality wise, was back on par with the challenges. And I think that they gave them decent material.
Mm-hmm.
And I think overall it was good. But we still don't have that drama because now the girls have a quote unquote game plan on how they're going to tackle this. And you know that's eventually going to break down.
Yeah.
You know it has to.
And you know, I think the problem is that they've stuck to it too long.
Yeah.
Had it been like an episode thing and then like the very next episode, it all fell to pieces.
Yeah.
I think that would have been more interesting. But I can understand that, you know, you're all friends. You want to be fair about it. You do it solely on talent. But here's the thing. We as viewers don't want that.
Yeah.
We want blood sport. We want backstabbing. That's what keeps Drag Race during the season really interesting. And it's funny because when you look at All Stars, like season All Stars 1,
yeah,
you know, yes, they kind of knew each other, but it still hadn't like popped like it had, like Drag Race has since then.
Exactly. I was gonna say that we have. Such a more invested fan base now. So the way that it is now and with having them do it this way with them eliminating each other, mm-hmm. you have those people that are out there just waiting like, okay, when is that one bitch that I love going to turn around and be like, you know what? I love you guys. But it's a competition. At the end of the day, we're not going to split this prize 10 ways.
Yeah.
You know, we're not each going to get $10,000 and then call it a day. And all 10 of our pictures, we'll do a big, you know, Insta collage mm-hmm. to put in the frame in the Drag Race Hall of Fame. We haven't gotten that yet.
No.
I think once it gets a little bit, we may not get it. I think it'll be a lot more interesting in the deliberations and the thought process once we get a little bit further in.
Yeah.
Just because you're going to run out of people to eliminate.
And, you know, like, Oh, shout out to World of Wonder, specifically RuPaul, because they won their first Emmy.
Ru won it, yeah.
Like, that's amazing.
It wasn't
amazing.
Even just, it wasn't just like a show Emmy for best lighting, yeah. Best Vaseline on a camera lens. It was for outstanding TV, like reality game show host. So RuPaul now has an Emmy statuette. Congratulations.
Which is well-deserved, and that, you know, harkens back to that appeal. Like, Drag Race has become one of those crossover sensations. You know, whether you're, you know, gay, straight, you know, what have you, it's just, it's all there. Like, everyone watches it. And so, you know, we need that sort of drama. And I feel like All Stars 2 has been lacking, because we got drama in All Stars.
Yeah.
Like, the first season. Like, we got it. And
oh, that was a lot, because, and I think at that point, you didn't have as much touring, so you didn't have the sense of sisterhood that these queens have now, because they're on the road so much together. You know, when they were doing teams and Mimi and Pandora were on a team together, that drama on that first episode, you know, you had all of these things that just kind of that bred contempt in a way, and you don't have it this time around, which isn't horrible. But you need to step up what the challenges are going to be. You need to step these pieces up, because you didn't have a ton of drama in Snatch Game's episode besides the Dora stuff. And that was all done before Snatch Game happened. But Snatch Game was funny. Mm-hmm. You know, you had the runway and the deliberations and, you know, Tatiana going home. And you had a little bit of that suspense versus drama. And it was a good episode.
Yeah.
You saw how a weak challenge can make an episode tank, like last week, because it was shit material. It was a shitty challenge, and there was no drama. So at the end of the day, you're just kind of like, by the end of it, you're like, let me wake up now for my nap, because mm-hmm. I just took a really good nap.
Yeah. This episode's challenge is similar to last week's challenge, but, you know, they have to act, and we're getting overacting, and they're not trying to, like, lip sync, because we see them lip sync all the time. So this one was, like, classic gay movies getting sequels, which they hashtag sequels.
At least this one won't get them in trouble with the trans community.
Mm-hmm.
I will say, though, I would liken this challenge to the Ruko's Empire challenge of season 8,
mm-hmm.
where last week's lip sync extravaganza I would liken to the Glamazonian Airways challenge of season 7, which for the most part fell flat. The Ruko's Empire challenge, while it did have some weaker links, but you had more people in that. So mm-hmm. you had, what, 6 or 7 people on each team. So you had more of an opportunity for weak links. This, with only having 7 people in the lip sync extravaganza. It was last week, mm-hmm. 7. You had stronger competitors, but shitty material.
Yeah, and it was so cluttered that nothing really stands out, even though they did a really great job. And so in this, let's back up a little bit. So this episode starts off with Fifi really pissed at Alyssa, because I thought we had an alliance. And the alliance is you vote off who got the worst critiques.
Yeah, so it doesn't become personal.
Yeah, which makes great sense for the contestants, makes terrible TV, as we've discussed.
But at the same time, if you're in it to win it and you've got your eye on that $100,000 and the title of, you know, or being in the Drag Race Hall of Fame, you're going to have to eventually not do that.
Yeah.
Because if you see somebody that you potentially think might be a stronger competitor, which honestly, in this case, I would have sent Katya home regardless, because I think she poses more of a threat in the overall. Ginger has a lot of talent, but I don't know if she's been able to really showcase it on the show.
And that's the thing. Like, I've seen Ginger perform here because, you know, she's a local queen to Orlando. Mm-hmm. And then, like, she's a powerhouse. Like, sometimes it's scary to see who follows her, because she's literally just slayed the game.
Yeah.
And, you know, what's so frustrating is that, you know, seeing someone so talented, so well-rounded, and then having them, and I just keep seeing that fried and chopped hair, it's harsh because you only have so many chances to shine.
Exactly.
And even if you do a good job, if you didn't do a great job, you get lost. You become, you know, safe in the middle. And that's the thing, to really win on Drag Race, and not saying like win the money and the ultimate prize, but to win on Drag Race and become like a Raven or a Jujubee or, you know, like a
Bendela, Latrice.
A Latrice. Yeah. You have got to show out each and every time.
Yeah. And even if you falter, you have those moments of like picking yourself up by the bootstraps. Mm-hmm. And if you're just kind of in the middle through a lot of it, you don't have that opportunity. And some of the best queens have all fallen into that bottom two and had that moment of girding their loins and just bucking up from the falter and making something of themselves and showing, you know what, I may have been in the bottom two this week, but I'm safe. I'm still here. I lip syncs for my life. I'm still going to do it. And then the following week they turn around and, you know what, I'm going to show up. I'm going to show out. And this is what I've got.
Exactly.
There's very few queens that haven't done that. Like Alaska gained a huge fan base, never being in the bottom two in her season.
Yeah.
But she had a lot of opportunity to go above and beyond. So we saw the acting chops, the comedy chops. We saw the progression from where she started at the beginning to the finale. You know, even though she didn't win, you saw that growth and you saw that piece of it where Ginger made it to the finale, but I don't think showed out the way that she could have in her season. Mm. And then she got to this and she did good in the first two challenges and even in the third challenge.
She did.
It wasn't that she did a bad job.
No.
But I don't think it stepped up to that level of high, high, high expectations. And then the runway looks didn't, you know, brought her down a little bit. Mm. And it didn't level out to where it needed to be. Yeah. But Fifi talks a lot about Alyssa switching the game up, flipping the script. Alyssa is very much, you know, no, I didn't. I looked at consistency. I looked at everything overall, which, again, not necessarily what, you know, anybody agreed to. But at the same time, had it been anybody else in there and they had gotten saved, you know, they would have wanted the same thing. Look at what I've done. I've been in the top. I've done this.
Agreed.
You know, when you're trying to compete and you're up for elimination, you're going to fight and you're going to want to talk to these people and be like, listen, I did. And Katya had resigned herself to going home in that episode. Mm. So they have a little bit of this thing and, you know, it is what it is. They all feel. And then Alyssa makes the comment of, you know, I don't know if you send me home next week, it's rigged. Rigor mortis. And I love the fact that they turn around and have detox. Like, who's Morris? Because that was my favorite part. Because I sat there in the bar with that friend. I'm like, what? It's rigor mortis. Yeah.
So we roll right into the maxi challenge, which I realize what's missing in All Stars is I like those mini challenges because it breaks it up.
Yeah, we only had it in the first episode when they did the reading challenge.
Yeah, and we're not having those moments to see them like formulate their ideas.
Yeah.
Like this seemed really rushed because they have to show, you know, us the acting challenge. And like that, you know, things like that always have to fall to the wayside. So what happened was we had the following. We had Show Squirrels, which is Showgirls with Roxy and Fifi.
Yes.
Fifi being Big Versace.
Well, originally she was going to be Little Versace. Uh-huh. And Roxy was going to be Big Versace. And we'll get to that. Well, do you want to talk about each one individually or do you want to go through them all? We'll do them one at a time.
Yeah.
I like it.
So it's Showgirls with a splash of Grey Gardens.
And a bit of Fifi's iconic breakdown from season 4, because as they're sitting there reading through the script and going over their lines, Fifi starts reading her lines saying, you're just a tired ass showgirl. Go back to obscurity where you belong. And she's like, wait a minute.
Yeah.
That sounds... And Roxy's like, I think I've heard that before.
Which is funny.
Yes.
It makes sense.
Yeah.
It was, for me, one of the better, like...
In jokes.
Yeah. And that challenge was great because Fifi carried it and Roxy floundered.
Yeah. And that was kind of, I think, part of the reason why Fifi encouraged them to switch roles. Mm-hmm. And that's why Fifi became Big Versace and Roxy took the role of Little Versace as kind of like the pageant queen. And yeah, I agree. I think that Fifi carried it. Fifi went balls out. She did really well.
And yeah, and like the thing about it is that you know the character that she's playing. And even though like we all love showgirls, she didn't give us like explicitly Nomi.
Yeah.
She gave us this over the top, washed up, living vicariously through my child, like pageant mom.
Yeah.
And that's what really sold it.
So she took Nomi and any generic mom from Toddlers and Tiaras and made a caricature of both of them and gave you that overacting, funny realness and good timing. Mm-hmm. Because the whole Nomi joke at the end, you know, like I think it all worked well and showcased her talent.
Yeah.
Roxy may look good.
She looked great as this like overgrown toddler in a tiara.
Yes.
Her look was flawless. Her acting was flawed.
She'll never win an award for acting or pronunciation of words she should know, like sash.
Which was?
Shaw.
Shaw?
What's a shaw?
You know that thing, that ribbon that you wear around like your body?
A sash.
Sash?
It was like she was just being, it was like Tarzan being taken out of the jungle, mm-hmm, after being raised by apes and the creatures of the forest and being taught English for the first time. Sosh.
Yeah.
Bitch, you know what you're doing. Stop trying to have another sequence moment.
No, and that's the thing. When you're in an acting challenge and you're bantering off, or even if you're bantering off someone like we are doing right now, you have to build each other up and you have to feed off each other.
Yeah.
And like, no offense, girl, I always have to try to outshine you, but you do the same. And yes, that's what makes our dynamic so like fun and interesting.
Because at the end of the day, no one really outshines the other.
Exactly.
Because we elevate and it helps us to bring our best game.
Exactly.
So at the end of the day,
as long as you still believe that, that's fine with me.
Shut up. I know your name's on the top of the marquee and not mine. I get
it. And don't you forget it.
As a quick aside, have you ever heard of Forbidden Broadway?
No.
It's this fun little like off-Broadway thing where they do... there's a theme to each of their shows and they do like these parody songs,
uh-huh,
to and about show, like songs from other shows, and one of the ones they do is it's Wickeder, and it's like Defying, I think at one point they've released it twice, and once was Wickeder and once I think was Defying Chenoweth. And it's basically Idina Menzel and Kristen Chenoweth kind of going back and forth. And at that big crescendo of Elphaba's part of Defying Gravity, she starts talking about, I'll be the star of Wicked after you've left the show. Like, it basically is kind of that whole thing where it's like, you know, so that just made me think of it. I'll have to play it for you.
Okay,
it's
thank
adorable.
You. So, which leads us into Velma and Weezy, which is Thelma and Louise.
Yes.
Which I thought it was going to be like a Florence and Weezy Jefferson, Thelma and Louise, which would have been fucking funnier than like a zombie Thelma and Louise.
Yeah.
And I thought that they had survived the car crash and just got hooked on meth. But I didn't realize that they were zombies. Like, that totally pass me by.
If their arms didn't fall off and then and they didn't talk about eating brains, probably could have been a meth skit as well.
And I think, I mean, it was funnier for me. Now, mind you, I had worked a very long hosting gig, had a couple, made dinner, lying on the couch watching this. I passed out right then and there.
It happens.
So I had to rewatch it. And once I realized that they were zombies, it was less funny. And I think maybe that's like personal preference. But
I think had they played it more like real zombies instead of southern meth heads with decaying flesh on their face, it would have probably been better. Like, had it been weird speech or something like that really kind of defined it. Maybe not that slow, because then it would have been a 14-hour, like, 30-second clip. But it didn't scream zombie.
No.
It screamed
especially
southern
in a,
junkies.
Like a cheap flop house of a, like a motel. Like,
yeah.
I like my idea better.
Yeah.
RuPaul, World of Wonder, hire me. Velma and Wheezy, but it's literally Florence and Wheezy from the Jeffersons. I just fixed that bit right there.
Are they on meth?
They are still on meth.
Oh, okay. Good,
or no, you know what? They don't have to be on meth. It's just very 70s stylized, and they've killed George to try to collect the insurance money, but it goes awry, and now they're living life on the lam. Bam!
There you go. There you go. the funny part about Detox and Katya was Rue let them pick their teams, and they did the talking head like confessional thing with Katya, and she's like, "I was looking like to my right, I saw Roxy. I looked to my left, I saw Fifi, and I'm like, where's Detox?"
Exactly,
because she was like, "I need to be with who I think will not outshine me, but compliment me."
Mm-hmm. And they complimented each other.
They did. But as a pair, they worked well together.
Yes, which I think they were all right. I think as a working pair together, they were the strongest.
Mm-hmm.
But when you only compliment each other, but there's no like breakout, standout like moment,
it's like
an old vaudeville like duo act. If you're doing it in time, it's not really funny. But if you're doing it in time and then the slapsticky one, not the straight man, kind of bumbles it, that's what makes it funny.
Yeah.
And then you know you knock them on the side of the head and you go. And so, like, it was good. I won't knock it. That was a weird one.
It was mediocre.
Yeah.
It was very mediocre. It was very middle of the pack. It was all right.
Which leads us to what happened to baby JJ, which we'll get to that with Alaska and Alyssa. Now, side note, shout out to a new podcast that I discovered. You must remember this. It's a podcast that goes into the first century of Hollywood, talking about Hollywood secrets or forgotten like memories. And if you are a fan of like TMC and you love like the Maltese Falcon and Casablanca, you must remember this. A kiss is just a kiss. Like, it is fantastic.
And what's sad is that I forgot that it was the movie channel, because I was like, TMZ? Oh,
Lord.
TMC.
Yeah. What's
or cool? TCM, Turner Classic Movies.
Turner Classic Movies, yeah. Sorry. I've been drinking. But that's not a surprise to anyone.
No, not at all.
But what's cool is that, you know, this podcast that I've been listening to gives me that old school Hollywood that has issues, because, you know, anytime a black person shows up, you're a mammy or a gardener or you're a butler and you're tap dancing with Shirley Temple. But what's cool about it is that, you know, taking this like deep look at everyone's like personal lives and secrets, it's a mess. Joan Crawford, batshit crazy. And they end with Mommy Dearest, which, you know, you have to. But seeing like her life and her career is really interesting. But they also talk about whatever happened to Baby Jane. And they do a really great way of not spoiling the movie for people who want to go see the movie. I got spoiled because I was literally this week, probably tonight or tomorrow, going to watching Whatever Happened to Baby Jane from beginning to end. And I already know what happens at the end. But that's fine because I'm still going to watch it.
70 years later, you get spoiled.
70 years later.
Spoiler alert. Spoiler alert.
70 years later, spoiler alert. But, you know, when you look at this challenge, so yeah, you must remember this. Totally watch it. It's really gay. It's old school gay.
Nice.
You have Alaska and Alyssa. Now, Alaska literally robbed the show, snatched everything that wasn't nailed down, and absconded to Tahiti, where she retired with all of her spoils. She did this amazing JJ, you know, because she's supposed to be Baby Jane.
Mm-hmm.
And she, like, her makeup is on point because it's in black and white. She's doing these overdrawn, like, Betty Davis, like, eyebrows. And she's really selling it. She's selling it. She's embodying Betty Davis. She's embodying this character. Like, her hair's on point. Like, her facial tics and movements, spot on. Like, she does, like, out of all of the performances, Fifi came in second for me.
Yeah.
But Alaska just really just took the cake.
Yeah, no, I was quite impressed with Alaska's work in that. And I think at this point in time, you're almost damned if you do to be in an acting challenge or a comedy challenge with Alaska. And Alyssa, I don't know if it was in, if it was her original intent was, oh, let me partner up with Alaska. Whether that was so that way she thought maybe, well, if she really rocks it out, and I'm not as good, it will still save me.
Yeah.
It'll still elevate our team. And she didn't do a bad job. I will say this. None of them did a bad job, really. But Alyssa, in comparison, and especially then they show you the behind the scenes where they're recording these you know, little movies with Michelle Visage and Todrick Hall. And you see all the stumbles and the enunciation. And I found it really hard that Alyssa could not learn how to say doo-dah for like 10 minutes. Like, how do you not, how do you, when they tell you it's doo-dah, how do you consistently go back and go doo-wah, doo-wah?
Yeah.
Like, I need you to start enunciating properly. I need you to start paying attention if that's really the case.
Agreed.
But it wasn't horrible, but Alaska was such a powerhouse that it didn't really matter unless Alyssa fucking burned down the set to try to take the attention away. It was all about Alaska.
But and it's this iconic scene, you know, with the, you know, here's your din din, and you grab the, I've seen these bits. You grab the, like, the tray and the cover and you pull it up and it's pork chop because she's made pork chop.
Which was cute. Didn't really talk about the Big Frida appearance.
Oh, Big Frida was in the show Squirrels one. Yes, I like cornbread and collard greens.
And she appears in this one, but the pork chop cameo, I think, was the highlight of the cameos. Agreed. For this episode.
But see, here's where I'm going to, and I hate to bash Alyssa because I gave her her props. I gave her props last week.
Mm-hmm.
But here's the ultimate, here's the gag. Here's the gag of it. So in this acting challenge where it's whatever happened to Baby Jane, where Alaska is Betty Davis, which means that Alyssa is Joan Crawford.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Who Alyssa portrayed in Snatch Game, but she didn't give us
Joan Crawford.
She gave us Alyssa quoting Mommy Dearest.
Yes.
But her Joan wasn't bad because she was giving us over the top. She was hitting all of those, like, gay cultural touchstones. But it goes to show you how limited Alyssa can be when she's out of her element. Because you already had the elements to Joan Crawford. You had to think about it because you knew you were going to go, you were going to do her going in for Snatch Game.
Yeah.
So why was your Bland, who's Blanche, why was it so bad?
Why was it so bad,
Alyssa? Why was it so bad?
Why was your Bland so bland?
Oh.
Yeah.
And it just, like, it just, what, girl? Really?
Yeah.
Really? Like, you're supposed to, you're not, you're an invalid, quote unquote. You've lost the use of your legs. But you, like, that role is so pervasive. It's so, like, she's so, she seems helpless and coying, but that coying is driving the other, it has drove the other one insane.
Yeah.
And she didn't give you any of that.
No.
She just gave you this, like, porcelain doll that's lying on the ground and wasn't like, give me something, bitch. I know Alaska must have been saying, girl, give me something.
Yeah. I need you to work with me here. Work with me.
So we get the runway.
Yes.
And the runway is inspired by Violet Chachki's,
Tartan 2-in-1.
Yes.
From the runway challenge, the first challenge of season 7, which was the most gag-worthy moment of that episode.
Yes.
Which made us think we got a great season here, and then they failed us miserably. Sorry, season 7 queens.
Yeah, but...
because I love Kasia and Trixie, and we're friends with Ginger, Trixie and, you know...
And Ginger, yeah.
But
great,
but, yeah.
Like, best queens, terrible season.
Yes, yes.
So here's the thing. Fifi...
Wait, before we do that, one of the things that has been talked about is how amazing RuPaul looked. Like, and Ru comes out looking good at the beginning of the runway bit. But damn, like, Matthew Anderson turned that up. Like, it's almost like he knew a year from now when this episode airs, it'll be right after RuPaul wins an Emmy.
Uh-huh.
And we need her to look flawless.
She looked amazing.
That was, yeah,
it's probably in my top 5 favorite looks for RuPaul. Just out of this world, very form-fitting, like the hair, which is like not her usual style for her blonde iconic mop, but just it looked statuesque.
Yeah.
It looked old school, but it also looked Blade Runner. And it was this like zebra print with this like sort of fish scale, like kind of skirt to it. It was just, it was amazing.
It worked.
She looked immaculate.
It was fantastic. So yeah, so then we get to the, I'm sorry, I wanted to make sure, because
no,
I know that
right.
Even, I think Ron had posted on our, on the Flame On Facebook page, commenting about how amazing RuPaul looked
and
right
I
after the episode.
I purposely didn't look at that because I wanted to be surprised.
Yes, yes.
And I was.
So Fifi comes out in almost like Prince Charming-esque kind of, I got Prince Charming with the little crown, with the blue. It felt very Snow White's Prince Charming.
Yes. Yeah.
And
or Philip. She gave me a little Philip.
I'm really bad with
Sleeping
with those.
Beauty.
Oh, okay. So that's who I'm thinking. I'm sorry. That's exactly who I'm thinking. So it was more Prince Philip with that baby blue kind of jacket feel. That's what I felt. And then, which had she done it in that like dark beast blue, like that royal navy blue, like that he has on his big beast coat?
Yeah.
I would have liked it. I think it would have worked a little better. It would have paired better because then she takes the crown off, twirls, undoes the top, and it unfurls into this gorgeous little yellow dress.
Yeah.
Which gave me Belle.
Gave me Belle. And also, I think my favorite piece, even though, like, the before and after, I love. And I don't agree with Carson, who's just like, individually, meh. I'm like, no, individually, that's really cool.
Yes.
Like, if they had to do, like, Drag King for a second, like, if they had to do, remember where, like, sometimes you have to do two looks?
The half and half.
The half and half.
Yeah, the 2-in-1 look from season 7.
Would have been great.
Or, not, yeah, the boy-girl look,
Victor Victoria.
Yes.
Would have been great. Independently, I still think rocked it, but I love the earrings.
The big cover.
Yes.
Yeah.
I love Fifi's earrings. Like, I think that to me, the crown sold the Prince look, but the earrings sold the Belle look.
Yes.
And I thought from beginning to end, well executed, A plus.
Yeah, because it was two separate looks, two separate outfits in a sense, that converted properly. That it wasn't just, I've got this one piece and it velcros to the top of my dress and I pull it down and now I've got pantaloons.
Yeah.
Like Flamenco Roxy. Her red and black flamenco look. It was pretty.
It was pretty.
I will not deny the fact that she looked fantastic. But when you come out in one look and then you just kind of unhitch these things from, like, unvelcro them, and now it makes this almost train-esque appearance because it were pants.
Yeah.
There wasn't a dress. And then, like, I don't think there was a lot of ingenuity.
No. It had a very, like, vibrant reveal, but once the reveal was done, there wasn't much to it.
Yeah, there was no wow factor. And for somebody like Roxy, who every time we've done one of these recaps, you've talked about if you're going to be in a competition with Roxy and you do a tearaway, you need to up your game. And I feel like Roxy did not up her game.
Exactly.
Especially coming out after Fifi.
It's because what's funny is when Katya came out, her dress in the beginning, very mod.
Yes. Yes.
Which makes sense because when she went formal, it was that long sort of elegant Valley of the Dolls sort of feel.
And she had the big bangs during the mod. So it felt very 70s.
Uh-huh.
It looked, the entire look top to bottom worked when she first came out. And then she dropped it into that long red velveteen, almost like crushed velvet looking long dress.
Agreed. And then she did. And that's the thing. She gave us not one, like, two-in-one reveal. She gave us a two-in-one reveal and a tearaway bang.
Which, the funny part was, and I didn't realize this the first time I watched it, it wasn't until the second time, that when she came out in her, like, mod look with the short dress and everything, basically stone-faced, very stoic, didn't open her mouth, because once she pulled down the dress and then pulled away her tearaway bang with the pentagram.
Yeah.
And then she opened up into the smile and was all the blacked out teeth with a little bit of blood in there. And it was like, that's awesome.
Yeah.
There was a wow factor. It was like, it may not have been the most dramatic look.
No.
But it was wow. Like, it stopped you. There's one. There's two. There's three.
Exactly.
And you're done.
Exactly. Which is why, for me, Katya was safe in my mind.
Yes.
In my mind, because you know what? You took an idea and you ran with it. And
to completion.
Yes. And as soon as she ripped away the bang, I'm like, that's Sharon Tate. And I'm just like, yep, Sharon Tate. So then we move on to Detox, giving us, as you penned it, what?
Oil slick geisha. Because it... And I don't mean the oil slick part as a negative. I like the color. It read very well and it worked for the outfit. Mm-hmm. But I couldn't think of any other way to describe it other than that sheen. Like when there's that like little spot that got some grease in it when you wash in your car and you get that swirl of pink and green, that film on top where the light reflects or refracts through it and gives you those colors. That's what I felt like that dress was.
Yeah, and you know what? Like, I liked it in the beginning, but the reveal wasn't a reveal. You literally just ripped the skirt away, and you're in just this bikini sort of...
No, she pulled down the skirt.
Oh, that's right.
Because the skirt was up. Like, it was a part of, like, the top piece, but it was like Roxy, where it didn't feel like it was very... There was not a lot of ingenuity to that. And then she pulled it off and it became more of a geisha bathing suit. She looked good. But for a challenge like this, I was a little surprised. Because she does some amazing things. Yeah. She pulls out some sick-ass looks. And it felt like... It's like when you're on a cake decorating show... And you have to do an engineering cake, which means you have to make something move.
Yeah.
And you put, or like, you know, it has to have like some sort of like crazy things on it. And you put a sparkler and you're like, look, I've got pyrotechnics. And you're like,
or
do you?
Another Food Network example. It's like when you're on Chopped and you're like, I have this and that, and I got to incorporate this random ingredient. I know what I'm going to do. And you're like, don't do it. Don't do it. Bitch, don't try it. I'm going to put this in the ice cream machine. And you're like, fuck. Where, you know, like literally everything up until this point has made sense.
Yep.
And then you do it and it works. It's just not good.
Exactly. Exactly. No, I agree. It just, yeah, it didn't work for me as well. And then we go into Alyssa. It was another one of those, I'm going to pin up the material to the top of my dress, and there was nothing to it. It was just black.
It was just black. And even though I like that the fringe of the dress, like the bottom of it, was, and I'll get to that, was film, because it looked like film, because what it is you have this, like, this puff that you're walking. It's very avant-garde. You pull it out. It drops as to, like, a full-length, like, floor-length gown. And it's got cameras all over it. And then, you know, you press a button, and then the flashes start to go off, and she's her own paparazzi. And, like, the idea worked.
I thought it was super cute.
It's a cool premise.
The second look, I didn't think it worked as a two-in-one, as a conversion. I love, as a photographer, I loved, and I'm like, those are some damn prop cameras, because there's no way that shit, because we have one of my cameras, we're working on possibly having some video stuff in the future for the podcast, but my camera's right here with the damn lens on it. That shit's heavy. To have all those and have earrings, like, that was some damn shells. I knew.
Like, especially because when the dress kind of fell and she instantly wasn't toppled off of her center of gravity, and they kind of bounced down and then bounced up a little bit, I'm like, I know that, girl. You ain't fooling nobody. Impressive, like, ideal, but in actuality, did it wow me? I was surprised. I was intrigued. But that's as far as it went.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with you on that. Which then leads us to our sixth and final runway. And I have opinions on this, which will probably not garner me a lot of support out there.
Okay.
But I will explain. I will explain it. Alaska comes out and is almost basically a cocoon.
She cocooned, yes.
Which I didn't like. I didn't agree with necessarily. Because I'm looking for two solid looks that convert. But the reveal, when she opened up that cocoon and spun around, she was Lil Pound Cake.
Lil Pound Cake. Which, amazing, because we go from this Betty Davis sort of severe makeup to even more severe makeup, and it works so well. Like, I think for a reveal, if you're going to, and see, that's the thing, both of your reveals don't have to be good.
Yeah.
But you realize the first one can be so-so, but the final one, you have to sell it. And that's what Alaska realized.
Exactly. And I will say this. I say that I didn't love it because of the first look. When she turned around and was Lil Pound Cake, I queened the fuck out at the bar. I was like, yes! I'm clapping. Like, it wasn't a huge crowd of us that night, but we all went crazy. And that's the wow factor. That's what you need. That the same way with Violet Chachki, when she turned that black one piece thing into a tartan dream, and we were all like, yes, it was the same thing, and it worked. It 100% worked for her.
Which means that obviously, because these people did so well, here were our top twos. Well, my top twos were exactly the top twos. Who were your top twos?
I would probably say that I was 100% in agreement that Alaska and Phoebe, for both their acting and their runway, I think they were the top for both of those reasons.
Mm-hmm. And then you had the bottom three, because we thought they were only going to do two.
Yeah, I was very surprised about that.
Yeah, which threw me for a loop. But the bottom three were Katya, which
I don't agree with.
And this is not to say I don't like Detox, because I do. But Detox was safe. And the bottom three were Katya,
Roxy, and Alyssa.
And Alyssa.
Yeah.
Which Alyssa I agree with.
Yes.
Roxy I agree with.
Yes.
Katya I do not.
No. I feel like they did a bottom three again after last week only doing a bottom two. Because they wanted to put Katya there. Because I think if it was just the bottom two, it would have been Roxy and Alyssa. And I think you would have known off the bat that it would have been Alyssa going home. I think when they plotted out this portion of the episode, because, you know, there's a storyboard.
Yeah.
They were like, if we put Katya in there, because she did get critiques for her acting. Yeah, Michelle was like, oh, when we started, you were very much in your head. So there were negative critiques there. They wanted you to have that feeling of, oh, maybe they will send her home because she should have gone home according to their work about the week before. So I think it was more just for a drama effect. But they were sent back to the workroom for deliberations. And Alaska did her one-on-ones with the girls. And Alyssa tried to plead her case and talk about how she should still be there. And that she was, you know, the other two girls have been in the bottom before. And, you know, she thought that she maybe got some leeway in there.
Yeah.
And Phoebe decided she was not going to do one-on-ones. Which is her prerogative.
Yeah, it's her prerogative.
You know?
And, you know, Detox took issue with it, but I don't, you know, like, one-on-ones are trite and they're bullshit and they don't really mean anything.
Oh, of course not, because you're going to make whatever decision you're going to make, it's quote-unquote good TV.
Yeah, but it's not, because, you know, what one-on-ones make me miss is Untucked.
Yes.
Because Untucked, even though, like, this past year it's gone straight to YouTube, it still works. Like, I still, you know, after I watch an episode, I go straight to Untucked. It works. And this is like a stripped down, deconstructed Untucked, and it's not working for me.
It's like they tried to combine the two different versions of Untucked.
Uh-huh.
The stripped down, gritty, behind the scenes, season 7, season 8 Untucked from YouTube. But with the manufactured drama of seasons 2 through 6.
Yep.
Where they're like, we're going to put them all together and we're going to make them hash it out with each other to see who's going to go home. But we want it to feel informal and like they're just talking amongst themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think it works well.
It doesn't.
I just don't think it doesn't resonate the same way.
Yeah.
So then you get the obvious, you know, bring back my girls. There's the big makeup kit with the three lipsticks in it. And we cut to commercial and come back for the Lip Sync for Your Legacy 2.
Got to Be Real.
Yeah.
Which is one of my all-time favorite songs.
It's a fantastic song. It's an upbeat and better song than some of the past choices that we've had this season.
It's also the song that's really prominent in Paris is Burning, because it always goes back to Paris is Burning.
Of course.
Which is great, because it should always go back to Paris is Burning.
Yes.
Do you want me to say who I am and all of that? My name is Peppa LaBeija of the House of LaBeija. I'm the mother of the house. I'm, you know, raining. And all that. But We have Fifi, who switches to this very like cat suit so I can dance and move, which I think was a mistake. I can understand. See, you know what? Sometimes I want a queen when she's lip-syncing to realize, fuck it, I need to step it up. And you hitch that bitch up and you start to step and kick and turn. She doesn't do that. She switches to the cat suit, which I completely understand because that dress that she was in was very restrictive.
And it didn't work for the song.
It didn't.
And that's what I think some people don't realize is that it's not the bottom two that have to prove something. Yeah. These are the top queens, so they're going all out in this look, and you're not necessarily thinking, how am I going to lip sync in this? Mm-hmm. That bell dress doesn't work for Got to Be Real.
It doesn't.
That cat suit worked for that.
Yeah.
For that. And we'll go into this a little bit later. But she's not the only one that changed.
No.
Katya changed into her Pokestop with Allure look. That was my favorite thing that came out of that episode, was the side-by-side comparison of Katya coming out with all that blue the and follies, pink. Yeah. And then the Pokestop with Allure and all of that around it was fantastic. But I think Alaska even changed her dress. Mm-hmm. It wasn't the same dress that she transformed into Little Pound Cake in.
No.
It was similar. Mm-hmm. So she still kept that look. But then she also had work boots on. Like, yep. She had them big-ass black, you know, work boots. And Fifi's got this skin-tight cat suit with these heels on. Which, it's amazed me how much this season... One, we've seen these costume changes because it never really has happened before. Mm-hmm. We've never really seen them come out in a different outfit. Once in a blue moon, maybe. But it's not a normal thing. But we've seen that a lot this year. And the kitten heels, the flats.
They're like, whatever, I make money.
It's seriously. I'm like,
I don't need it that bad.
I get it, but it's amazing. Like, Katya did her thing in the swimmer look in flats. It was Alaska that she competed against, yes, because that was the latex look. Mm-hmm. Alaska's heel was maybe half an inch, 3/4 inch. Like, and I give respect for the queens, and you do it in heels, and it hurts like a motherfucker. Mm-hmm. But it amazes me that, like, we've seen flats and boots and kitten heels versus, not saying they need to go out in 6-inch stilettos, but give me something.
Give me something. Agreed. But here's the thing. Like you said, I understand why Fifi changed, because, you know, that's, you know, for the lip sync, for Got to Be Real, you don't want to do it in that. I understand that. However, when your makeup and your dress fit a song like they did for Alaska, great. Because Lil Pound Cake didn't start off singing the lead vocals. She sang the backups. Which is really funny because, you know, Got to Be Real. And if you haven't heard the song, listen to it. If you haven't heard it in a while, refamiliarize yourself with it. But, like, her facial expressions and her tics, like she did for, you know, Baby JJ, really just severe, really funny and smart. She didn't have to do death drops. She didn't have to do high kicks. She literally just, she hammed it up, but she hammed it up in a very structured way.
Yeah.
And didn't break character.
Well, that's the thing. I think that she could have done any song with those facial expressions. She worked a character. Mm-hmm. She didn't work the song.
Yeah, agree.
But it worked. It was funny. It was entertaining. And at the end of the day, that's going to get you noticed more than a picture-perfect lip sync. And I'm not saying that Alaska didn't have a spot on lip sync.
Yeah.
You almost weren't even paying attention to that. So it still could have been spot on, but she caught your attention for her character.
Agreed.
Versus the lip sync itself. And that gave her the win in $10,000. And the power to give somebody a sex change operation, apparently. Every time RuPaul says who's getting the chop, I'm thinking that one of them is transitioning.
Lord have mercy. We're going to get direct all of your hate mail to pat@flameonshow.com.
It's funny. I either think of that or I think that Ted Allen's going to pop out with a cloche.
See, I already think it's, yeah, I think it's Ted Allen. I always think it's, or you're about to get chopped.
See one of them walk out and there's a cleaver stuck in the doorway.
So ultimately they do the, you know, bare bones, untuck, blah, 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 blah. And then big surprise. And I love how they cut to Michelle Visage where she was just super stunned by, you know, the decision, but they sent Alyssa home.
Well, I think she was a little stunned because of the setup, because you had Roxy in the bottom three. And when Alaska was talking about making this decision, it was very much about, this is somebody I think of as my sister. And all this. And I know they were on the season together. And the reports have been that Alaska and Alyssa were extremely close during the filming of this season. So I get it from that perspective, but you don't know these things necessarily as your Joe Schmo viewer at home.
Yeah.
You know Relaska talks, you know these connections from the season. So you're thinking, oh shit, she's gonna send Roxy home. And then she pulls it out of, you know, the lipstick out of her underarm, you know, dress piece and is like, you know, I'm sending home Alyssa Edwards. And I was like, oh, all right. And then starts odd sobbing.
A tea. Like, I'm like, are you Nipsey Russell playing the Tin Man? A tea.
It was so weird. And I mean, whether or not it was played up for the cameras, whether or not it was real, it is what it is. It was just awkward.
Mm-hmm.
So they send Alyssa packing. She does her sign-off from her YouTube series, Always and Forever, Alyssa Edwards. And then I felt like her mouth was dry and she needed to take a second to moisten it. Mm-hmm. And then did her tongue pop.
And, you know, like she, you know, she left gracefully the runway. She had a, you know, a really good joke. She, you know, does that thing. It's like, oh, Alyssa, it ain't over, girl. And then, you know, we hear RuPaul in the background.
Because they cut away. Mm-hmm. Where normally we get this whole, where there's more of the lipstick message and there's the talking to the camera and giving your goodbye speech. And we only got a little bit of it. And it cuts away to you hearing over like the PAs, RuPaul doing the closing of the show kind of speech that they show on the runway. And that was the point where I was like, oh, it's happening.
Uh-huh.
And we're four episodes in of an 8-episode season.
Yeah.
So you know that there isn't much time left.
Mm-hmm.
So you knew it had to happen, but we then get transported into the, what feels like the beginning of next week's episode.
Yep.
The queens come in and it's, you know, Alyssa was just eliminated. Literally, she was just eliminated. Mm-hmm. And they start talking and Fifi kind of goes in about Alyssa's critique because, I skipped the part where she also says that she would have eliminated Alyssa as well. Yeah. She pulls out the lipstick and Michelle Visage on the runway had said, because Carson praised Alyssa's look and her comedy without, like, but saying, like, certain things don't matter because she can just make those big googly eyes and just move her mouth around and it's funny. And Michelle was like, no, those little things have to matter.
They have to. And she's right. That's the thing. Michelle is right. The little things have to matter because you can't just, you know what? It's like, this gonna get real. It's gonna get real for a second. So I think looks wise, I'm a solid 7. Like, you know, looks wise, I'm a solid 7. But I think personality wise, I'm a 9.5. Because like my personality, you know, like how fun I am, really like sells it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and that's fine. I don't think I'm ugly. I don't have body issues. It's just, you know, whatever. But I don't think that I can just get away with, you know, eating nothing but, you know, sour cream and ricotta all day and think that I'm going to bag a 9.5 and a 10. No. Sometimes, I'm not saying weight, I'm not fat shaming anybody, because, you know, girl, you know, I put on a winter coat if you get my drift. Like, the little things have to matter. Like, I always want a haircut. I want, you know, my breath to be fresh and minty. And after I've been drinking for a while, specifically wine, I want to make sure that if I do meet a gentleman, I have brushed my teeth and my tongue so it doesn't look like this. We've been drinking wine, so I just stuck my tongue out at Pat.
But girl, so, can I just say, you might want to take that winter coat off in the middle of summer.
I know, it was a bad decision.
I keep mine on all year round. It's all right.
So, the little things do matter. Alyssa was, for me, the weakest person this week.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Fifi has a point. And for the most part, what we saw, everyone was nodding in agreement that you don't just get to skate by.
Exactly.
You have to give it your all the time. And if you misstep, that's on you. But your missteps, as severe as, and they weren't, and that's the thing about Alyssa, they weren't severe.
No.
In this week's episode, it was just enough to get you eliminated.
Well, that's
in a season with such talented people.
In an all-star season where all of these girls are very highly regarded queens, you have to be that good. And if you stumble, it can send you home. And she stumbled. Mm-hmm. She didn't put that $100,000 performance out there.
Mm-hmm.
She put a $10,000 performance out there, and it cost her this competition. Except that while they're having this conversation,
bum, 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 bum,
the mirror lights up from behind.
Because it's a two-way mirror.
And we all, if you listen to our first ever interview with Ginger Minge back before season 7 started, you knew that because you knew that the cameras were behind there because she talked about when, because you could see the blue light for whichever camera was filming at the time. Mm. So she knew that if the blue light wasn't on her, say something shiesty or shady and it automatically turns on and starts recording you. So we knew these mirrors are two-way, which is awesome. But you have almost like the ghost of Christmas past, present, future, and past perfect.
Yes.
I had to figure out. I was like, I don't know what. There we go. We'll have a fourth one. And it's Alyssa in her camera dress. Mm-hmm. And you've got Coco.
Yep. First one to go.
You've got Miley Cyrus. Tatiana.
Who? I'm just like, who is that? Like, which one was that again? And you were like, girl, that's Tatiana. I'm like, oh, it's Tati. Yeah.
Yes. Ginger. And Alyssa Edwards all just kind of giving them the evil eye, reminiscent of after the second opening episode of season 6, where you had the two factions, where we've gone from 7 and 7 to 6 and 6, and then you got like Adore and Laganja and Gia, and them all sitting there like filing their nails, like being all, we were here first, we're gonna take you out. Like that kind of look, they were just giving them all of that. And as you know, Katya's talking head moment of face crack of the millennium. And it was, and it sets us up for what next week?
I don't know. Revenge. I'm sorry. Revenge. I was like, I don't know what's next. Revenge.
Which you've gotten me saying it now when that whole thing happened.
That's the best way to say it, revenge. Like you say it, like John McGovern started me on it, and now I can't say it any time. You're Courtney Love saying revenge, which just sounds like revenge. So I'm excited about next week. But apparently, all this shit has gone down behind the scenes. Girl, what's happening?
All right. So for those of you who don't get into all the personal lives and all the craziness that happens in real life, you can stop listening now. Although, quite honestly, I don't know why you would have been listening an hour into this if you don't care about this as much as we apparently do. And we're having just as long of a recap as the episode itself. But it's fun. You all enjoy it. Joel Bradshaw commented on Twitter. Was like, I need more now.
Also, like us, share us, like tell your friends. Please, every little bit helps.
Exactly. And I know a lot of you guys follow other like queens or other like drag queen outlets, whether it's online media or whatnot, share us with them, because as you've heard in the past, we do cross promote. We did our dual podcast with Drag Dungeon.
Drag Dungeon.
Yeah. So it's share us out there. Mm-hmm. So here we go. So let's talk about real life. We are going to start with the lesser of the two crazinesses out there. And that would be the apparent huge beef between Coco Montrese and Roxy Andrews. Which we saw the elimination on the first episode, and Roxy said, you know, this may cost me a friend, but she had to follow her conscience. And they had all agreed that the person with the harshest critiques would be sent home. Mm-hmm. So really, at the end of the day, no one thought it was a ludicrous idea that Coco Montrese went home.
No.
So apparently, Coco tweeted on the 4th of September. So this is a little over a week. Mm-hmm. A week and a couple of days after. So now we've had two episodes of All Stars at that point. Coco tweeted out, some people sell out family and friends for fame and little fortune, in parentheses, 10K. Knowing who these people are helps you evaluate intentions accurately. Thanks, Rue. To which someone else responded, at Coco Montrese, don't be shady, be a lady. This isn't RuPaul's best friend race. Still heart you and at Roxy Andrews. Mm-hmm. So then Coco responded with, because you replied to the people that are tagged in it, she replied saying, like I said, hope that works out for her. Reap what you sow. Hashtag alliances. Hashtag nothing to prove. Hashtag not my issue. And this was screen grabbed and put up by Roxy with the comment, nothing to prove, but this was her post that started it. You do the math. Everything was fine before at Coco Montrese. The funny part is that it has not stopped. It just keeps on back and forth between these two. There are a whole list of tweets. I'm going to read you a couple of these because I think they're fun. This is all Roxy Andrews. I didn't go to Coco's page. Mm-hmm. It's funny watching half the story unfold in front of your eyes. So it started on September 14th. So this is 10 days after the Coco tweet out. These girls keep mentioning my name, yet the people they are saying it to are telling me and laughing about her trying it. Hashtag told y'all. And then she puts out this tweet of just nothing but hashtags. Told you all I would lose a friend. It's for itself. We both choose you. It's been a year. See you at the reunion. I have nothing to say. Get over it. Which I'm like, bitch, you just did it. Like five of the hashtags and then you hashtag I have nothing to say. Apparently you got something to say.
Yeah.
But anyway, I'm going to read this one in the right order. So China Black on Twitter responded to the hashtag tweet that said, babe, you really didn't lose much. Honestly, why was she there in the first place? She had nothing to offer. To which Coco responded with, you got so much to say online, run up on me and say it. Hashtag bus stop bandit. Yeah. And then Roxy posted a picture of the two of them. She goes, I guess this was a hate post then before she decided to go to Chicago and read, pull up the videos. And it's a picture of Roxy and Coco together because they've known each other forever.
Yeah.
And the last tweet in this whole thing, which I'll say because it made me kind of giggle, was the sad part is I'll actually accept her apology when she's ready. Not for the bus stop joke, though. Too far. I'm like, it's all fun and games and a reading challenge.
Yeah.
But when you try to bring it into real life and use it, no, ma'am.
No, ma'am.
So, yeah. So, Roxy and Coco are having quite a bit of issue. And it's a year later. Like, it's not like this just happened. These things don't happen in real time.
This has been festering an entire year.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It is crystallized in venom and hate. This is what I want in the episodes.
She came back from a night of hooking and then was stabbed and then crystallized and was reborn as a glamazon.
Yep.
The other big thing. This is big in the world of Drag Race. Fifi O'Hara and the producers of RuPaul's Drag Race are in a ginormous battle back and forth.
Why?
Fifi is hashtag over it officially. just not happy. Basically, turn around saying that they used her for this, that they set her up, telling her that she would get redemption, that she would basically be able to rehabilitate her image after the way that she portrayed herself on season four. And we're not getting any of that. The way they're cutting or the way that they're showing it. And in some cases, I don't necessarily think it's the way that they're showing it. I think they're showing pieces of it. And the audience has taken it as, oh, she's just being Fifi and just doing the same shit over again.
I can see that, because there is some, like, to me, I see the redemptive quality of Fifi because, like, I'm rooting for her this season. But what I see the editing doing is, like, it's like there's a dead queen on the floor with, like, a scissor, like, hole in her back. And nobody sees who actually was holding the scissors. But if you look, not really closely, but if you just look over at Fifi's workstation, there's just nothing but scissors. There's a, like, a whole scissors, like, cutler, like knife block. And then there's, like, one missing. And then it's slowly dripping over by the mannequin bust that holds her wigs. Like... And that's the thing. So I can understand that. But, like, she's mad and she's talking about it. So that means she's pissed.
Yeah. And there's been a lot of things that have come out. She was hosting at Roscoe's in Chicago. Mm-hmm. Not this past week. The week before. So the Lip Sync Extravaganza episode. And it was her and, I believe, Tatiana. And she went off. And it was... like she before she said anything, she said, I know y'all are gonna be on Reddit, so pull out the cameras and get this right, like, get my words right, and started to just go on about the fact that they she only had a week to put together all of her looks for all the challenges. I guess by the time they contacted her, they were like, we film in a week or whatever the case was. And she started really kind of going in on the producers and had mentioned one by name, which apparently Willem has also called out for being very manipulative and very much about playing the queens for the storyline. So I'm going to read you some of the tweets, just some, because... And a lot of these are coming from people, and then she's responding to. You know, you get things like, I sincerely dislike FPV O'Hara. She's such a cunt. Rotten, tired ass showgirl. Seriously, don't come to Cali. Which she responded, and you are an outstanding citizen of society with this tweet. Speaking of cunt and rotten, you get stuff like, you did it to yourself, dumb bitch. To which Fifi's responded with, no, I didn't. The fact that the show creates monsters and trolls like you at the expense of our lives is wrong and fucked up. And then there are some supportive ones that she then retweets to kind of put an emphasis out there. You know, Fifi O'Hara, you should have won the lip sync. To which she responded, let's be honest, I was never going to win anything. A redemption, a win, a crown. They turned people on me. Hashtag family. Remember when I said we were going to come back to this in a little bit? There was a tweet, any queen that changes clothes pre-lip sync... in a parentheses, at Fifi O'Hara, is weak, weak tea. To which Fifi responded with, LMFAO. So, Katya, Alyssa, Alaska, and myself? Ha. Huh. And it's true. Like,
it's true.
You know, if you're going to try to call somebody out, really look at what you're saying and make sure that you're on point, because it's just going to be turned right back on you.
Yeah.
And it's just, it's ridiculous. Two more things that I really wanted to point out for this whole thing. I'm going to give you this one. I've decided that I'm not attending the RuPaul's Drag Race reunion. I don't feel the show, producers, or host have the best intentions for me. Then another tweet. My decision is set in stone. I would not be coming with anything but hurt and pain in my heart and know that it would not be shown correctly. And then the third of the three tweets in a row. Sometimes true actions speak louder than words. Can't manipulate me if I am not there. I'm protecting my heart and mental state when they didn't. Which then led into an Instagram post. And it's a little long, but I think this encapsulates a lot. And this is on Fifi O'Hara's, and it's a picture of her from the lip sync and the cat suit and all that. And she wrote, I was so proud of this episode because I finally got to be in the top two after being told every week you weren't good enough. I realized after filming All Stars, my place isn't on this show and in front of a camera where context of a simple thing can be twisted into such a vile way. I really sat back when they called me to be on All Stars and said, this time I'm going to show the world the Fifi so many people who have met me love and support. I don't care anymore who sees this. I don't care anymore if people are mad that I told the truth. I don't care if people think I'm handling this the wrong way. There is no right way to handle this except stand your ground and speak up for what is right. I'm tired of the hurt, heartache, pain, death threats, and threats of violence I have received because of a few story producers felt it was okay to go to bed at night cozy with their paychecks from manipulating and twisting the context of my words. I went into All Stars with a gleam of hope that I was going to finally have this redemption I was promised in season 4. The people that hated me before, let's face it, they were never going to like me, and that is okay. Their loss, not mine. But I deserved a fair chance. From day one in the confessions, I told my story producer I will not say X, Y, and Z because I did that the first time and it got me in trouble. This time I watched myself and they still played and twisted when I am stating facts as I am playing mind games. I got in numerous arguments with her discussing how she would never understand why I'm quiet or don't talk as much as I do because I have to 100% watch what I say because of the grave I dug in season 4. She continued to say I was doing nothing but a disservice to myself by not giving them what they want. Unfortunately for her, my mom raised me that integrity and respect goes a lot farther in life than reaping joy off the misery of others. I'm so grateful for the doors that RPDR has opened, but I have learned now that quote-unquote family is just a word used to sugarcoat and mask the demons of the machine. They've made it acceptable and normal for people to be okay breaking me down. That is not love or family. And I will say this, we'll talk about this more, but I want to say this, and this is real straight up shit right now. If you, and when I say you, I mean anybody out there listening, feels it's okay to threaten somebody's life, to threaten harm or danger to a person, any person, first off, but let alone a drag queen on a competition show, then hit stop and don't listen. We don't need you. We don't want you. That is not right or in any way, shape, or form acceptable from anyone.
Yeah, like, obviously I've made it known that, like, I'm not a fan of Alyssa Edwards, but, like, I would never go to her house and threaten to burn it down because I have never burned a barn in my life. And I will not start here. No. Not a barn or her summer home, which is the stables at the Kentucky Derby.
But that's the thing. You can have an opinion. Mm-hmm. You cannot like a queen's performance on a show. You can go to a show and not like their performance in person. There are queens from these seasons that I've had to do photo shoots or meet and greet photos for that I could care less about. Mm-hmm. But I'm not going to sit there and be like, and threaten them that they should never step foot, that I'm going to throw acid in their face. I'm not going to threaten to that they should die or stay out of Cali. Fuck you.
And, you know, like, ultimately that's, you know, Pandora Box said it when we interviewed her, is that, you know, she works in editing. She knows how it goes. So you literally have to be as nice as you can. But even when you are being nice or diplomatic, you know, things taken out of context will always get you in trouble.
For sure. And if they're going to paint you in any way that they're going to paint you, you can say the bare facts. And depending on, they could turn around and put that sentence in the middle of somebody faltering. And it makes it look like you're shit talking the person. It doesn't matter. And honestly, if you have that much of a problem, then don't follow her. Don't look at her Instagram. Don't care. Move on.
Yeah, and it's frustrating because for me, like, you know, Fifi is giving me that redemption arc, but I'm looking at it as I'm taking the pieces of what she's doing and not what's being edited for, like, you know, oh, like, I don't think, when she said to Roxy, I don't think your accent is as strong as you think it is. Like, she, like, honestly, to me, that felt like she was actually saying, hey, I don't think this is going to work for you. Do I think that Roxy should have still done it? Yes, because that was Fifi's opinion. But I don't look at that and think Fifi tried to sabotage her.
But at the same time, it's not like Fifi held a gun to her head and made her change it. If she thought that she could do it, then she would have done it. If somebody has that much sway over you, then you're not set in what you're doing. Mm-hmm. If somebody can turn around and be like, you know what, listen, I don't think it's not as strong as it needs to be, then what do you do at that point? Then you practice to make it work.
Yeah.
You don't turn around and go, well, then I'm going to change it to this other person who I'm also not going to be good at doing. And it's just, it's ridiculous. The other thing that happened with this whole thing is RuPaul chimed in. In an indirect shade-throwing way, mm-hmm. which I appreciate RuPaul for all she's done, but I think it was a bit messy to do. RuPaul on Twitter posted a picture of Jessica Rabbit that said, I'm not bad, I'm just drawn that way, and captioned it, oh, okay, and then unfollowed Fifi on Twitter. Which seems so childish in a way, but at the core of it, Fifi is speaking out about the producers and the people editing and making the show and making these storylines. Yeah. She's not, in nothing that I read, was there anything that said, RuPaul sucks. There's one tweet where it said that, I don't think that's the show or the host or have my best intentions. It's the only time that I saw anything that ever once indicted RuPaul in anything,
yeah.
And that was very much a passing thing, and it was talking about the show and the reunion. So for RuPaul to kind of hop in the middle of this, and whether it's about Fifi or not, all this shit's been blowing up over the last couple days on Twitter. It's like the whole I keep the lights on over our logo in the female shemale mini challenge controversy. There are times where, and she was being directly quoted in that. Like, she was part of that whole controversy.
Yeah.
This was cycling with the producers and Fifi, and to dip your toe into that, I feel was a little much. I feel like she should have taken the higher road and not
You don't
done
have
that.
To comment.
Yeah.
You don't have to comment.
Had she turned around and said, RuPaul's a bitch and she's making it so that way I don't get redemption and I look like I'm this, then clap back. Then you're being called out and you want to have your side of it, you want to say your piece, fine. But when it's an issue with this, and the funny part is, it's not the first time that this has been a thing.
Which is what I was going to say. When Drag Race, like the production side, loves you, you shine.
Yep.
You come back, it's great. But there are, you know, queens that we've seen that when you've crossed them, you know, whatever, it may be an actual slight, it may be just a perceived slight, you get ousted, you know, and then it takes that person that literally you take what you got and you run with it. Willem's that person. Yep. Willem got disqualified. Makes sense. But my favorite Willem song is RuPaulogize. Because she literally said, you said I was disqualified. You said you want me back. She's like, you know, and then you say that All Stars doesn't want me. Bitch, I already bought the gowns. Bitch, wait. It's a loss of income. That's a loss of income. Like,
I love that you're quoting RuPaulogize for all of this. It's amazing.
It's true. Like, yeah. If you have angered the world of wonder gods, sometimes there's not much you can do but just stand your ground. And that's why, like, I'm really pulling for Fifi. I totally understand. You know, Adore felt like she got, you know, manhandled and mangled this season. And then she left. And, you know, I can understand that. I wish she would have stayed because I think that she brings a lot to the show. But if she needs to go, because she doesn't feel like this is constructive, then, you know, girl, go. And so that's the thing. Drag Race is a great platform if it works for you.
Exactly.
But if it starts to work against you, and that's not a dig at RuPaul, that's not a dig at World of Wonder, that's just if it comes to a point where it's not helping you, you gotta let that shit go.
Yeah, exactly. So that's the craziness that is going on right now.
This, I think, was our best recap ever.
It was, because it not only we had some good material to work with, we got it ready for revenge. And some real life drama and controversy. Yes. So I'm looking forward to seeing what redemption, revenge, craziness goes on, because in the teaser for next week, RuPaul does say that one of the queens will get to lip sync, or the queens will lip sync and the winner will get a spot back in the competition. So it'll be interesting to see how that all plays out.
I'm excited again. I'm hoping that this next episode is going to be it. Like, it's either going to work or it's not. So who knows? But with that, I'd like to thank our listeners for once again tuning in to us. Not that you tune in, you download us. You can find us on iTunes and SoundCloud and Stitcher.
Speaking of iTunes, we have a new review that I wanted to share real quick at the end of this episode. This is from John Scott Harrison. Gay and geeky, just how I like my men. The Flame On crew are some of my favorite voices on the Nerdy Show Network, Oral especially, and not just because of his name.
Oh,
so I thought that was a special one to share with you at the end of this episode.
Oh, thank you so much. You're a dream. And that, you just literally put a feather in my cap, and there's a smile on my face, but that also could be the alcohol.
I think it's a combination. Mm-hmm. It's a good combo.
Just like our now, I assume, 5-star review. Please like us, rate us on iTunes, follow us on every social media platform that we're on. Also, thank you to our Patreon subscribers. You guys really do make a difference. I know, like, sometimes you don't see it. I hope that sometimes you hear it. Sometimes, like, at some point in the future, I hope you can see it. Yes. But, like, every little bit helps. You guys are helping support us do something that, let's be real, we're all doing for no money.
Exactly.
None whatsoever. We're doing it because we love you guys and we love doing this. So thank you so much. And with that, this isn't RuPaul's Best Friends Race. Quack, quack.
Thanks for listening to Flame On, presented by Nerdy Show. If you like what you've heard, please rate and review us on iTunes, like and follow us on SoundCloud, or give us your feedback at nerdyshow.com/survey. Flame On is produced and engineered by Pat O'Rourke and created by Brian Pittard. As listener-supported entertainment, we rely on you to keep this and other shows on the Nerdy Show Network alive by telling a friend or funding the network via Patreon. Any size contribution gets you exclusive outtakes, episodes, and images from across the network. There's even more perks available. Just head over to patreon.com/nerdyshow. To find out how you or your company can underwrite this or other Nerdy Show programming, visit nerdyshow.com/sponsorships. For more podcasts, articles, community forums, and other awesomeness, visit nerdyshow.com and be sure to follow Nerdy Show and Flame on all your favorite social networks. Flame On Podcast on Twitter and Flame On Show on just about every other platform. If it's gay and geeky, we've got it covered.